Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to my Blog Talk Radio show, Live Your Music. I'm Margot Joy Denader, and I'm broadcasting from Marin County, California. My guest for today's show, Julie Bon Genovese, is an inspirational speaker, artist, coach, mom, and best-selling author of her award-winning memoir, Nothing Short of Joy, which is endorsed by Dr. Wayne Dyer, Dr. Christian Northrup, and Dr. Bernie Siegel. Julie has been featured on TV and radio, including Anderson Cooper Live, NBCLX, and Oprah.com. Being born a dwarf with degenerative arthritis was not the curse Julie originally believed. It turned into magic. Julie now mentors spirit-led creatives on how to transform life's grief into a springboard to the soul. We'll be talking about her book, Nothing Short of Joy, Creativity, and how to download her free ebook, Release the Block So Creativity Rocks, during the show. To connect with Julie online, visit her website at www.nothingshortofjoy.com. Welcome, Julie.
Thank you, Margot. Great to be here.
Oh, it's so great to have you here and to finally talk with you. And I just have to tell you that I just love your book. I love the cover of it. I just love how you're standing next to the director's chair and you've got the word joy wrapped around you. So
yeah, actually, that originally, when they sent me the first cover shot, the J wrapped around and right under my boobs like a sling, and I remember being horrified and thinking, oh my gosh, and I immediately wrote to her and said, wait, doesn't that look ridiculous to you? But she didn't even see it. She just kind of sent it right off to me thinking, oh, we've got it, and well, they moved the J so that it's no longer a bra, but whenever I think of that J, that's what I think of.
Oh, that makes me laugh. You know, you've got a great sense of humor. I've noticed that with your other interviews and also with the book, and then talking with you beforehand to prepare for the show. You know, you make me laugh, and I love that. And to
Aww,
me, joy,
thank
a
you.
Lot of joy is about letting yourself laugh, letting yourself be silly, not worrying constantly about what everyone else is going to think.
That's really true. It can be a defense at times for me. I know I laugh when I'm nervous as well, but I grew up feeling so serious, and I wanted to be taken seriously because I was laughed at for the wrong reasons. You know, I wasn't laughing with people, and so it's sort of, when I realized, started reading self-help books, started on my own spiritual path, realizing that joy was something I could learn, it could be a habit, that I could come back to my true self, and that laughter would be a part of that medicine and that magic, it was sometimes hard to let go of the seriousness, because that, I thought, made me more of a acceptable, you know, solid person, like a left brain, and I'm really more of a right brain person, and I I don't really thrive well when I get really serious. So the lightheartedness, I think, is more a natural part of me, but there was a learned part of me that was very serious and very worried because of my condition and because of the way I saw myself through other people's eyes, and I compared myself to them. And that all is just like kryptonite for the soul. It doesn't allow you to feel free in this world, which I think we all certainly want to feel that.
Oh, totally, and totally. In fact, you know, we were talking before, when we talked before, we were talking about Abraham Hicks and how much a great influence they've been in our life. And they always say that we're here for freedom, growth, and joy, and those three things. And, yeah, I mean, how can you feel free, and how can you grow, and how can you feel joy if you're constantly worrying about what everyone else thinks? And yet we all do. I grew up feeling, basically, like you said, a little bit too serious. I love to read. I always got the book certificates every year because I read like 18 books or something like that, in addition to the ones that we had to read for school. And I lived in the country, in a little tiny town in Northern California. So you know, reading was the thing that I loved doing most, other than listening to music and singing along with that. And then when I was 12, I overheard my grandmother say to my mom that I should forget about singing. And you know what? I gave up singing for all the way until our son was 3 years old. That was in 1993. And yeah, and it gives me so much joy. I don't want to do it to be a rock star or at this point or anything. And I didn't even really want to then. I just wanted to sing because it felt good and it gave me joy. And that's one of the things that I love about you and about your book, is that you're about joy. And tell us a little bit about why you titled your book Nothing Short of Joy.
Well, I started out that I was always selling myself short. And that was originally going to be the title. But my editor discovered there was already a book on the market called Don't Sell Yourself Short. And it was also about, it was for younger children with dwarfism and, you know, telling them how to find their strength and their courage. And she said, "Ew, you don't want to name it something close to something else, and God forbid they go and find that book and not yours." So mm-hmm. I was brainstorming with some friends, and they said, "Well, selling yourself short was the first part of your life, but what's been the result?" And then my friend said, "It's been nothing short of," and somehow in there we all kind of went with, "Oh, joy." The joy was what I was reaching for. It's not what I'm not a perpetual joy machine. I have my issues like any other human, and I have the whole gamut of emotions. And partly why I feel joy and enthusiasm for my life is I allow myself the grief and the sadness and the authenticity of that and the anger and things that come up because of the way we were raised. A lot of us into belief systems, BS I call it, that isn't who we are. And it creates a lot of unrest and despair. But if we try and stuff it down and pretend it's not there, it mm-hmm. really gets fiery. And then things start to fall apart, as if to say, like, you can't move on until you really honor and embrace all of your humanness, not just the joy, not the mm-hmm. fun. Mm-hmm. That's always what we want to reach for, and I can turn it around a lot more quickly these days. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the point, is not to pretend that we are ever joy missile, but that all these emotions have their place as well. And if we honor them, they move much more quickly. They move on, and then we can be in peace. We can be in a relaxed, centered place. And then that can often be that springboard to joy.
That is so well said, and that is so true. You're so right. Well, there's that saying, what you resist persists.
It really does. If you don't look bad or mad or whatever, it just grows.
It's like, you know, the saying, what you think about expands. And the more you try to resist it, you're still thinking about it, even though you think you're not. You think you're thinking about the opposite, but you're not. You're thinking about what you don't want to think about, and so then you end up thinking about the unwanted thing, and that just grows instead of thinking about what's wanted.
Yeah, and if there's judgment about the emotions, which there often is, and
mm-hmm.
most of us were sort of within my family, there was a joy and there was a lot of love, but there wasn't a lot of communication about the tougher emotions and how mm-hmm. to deal with them. And there was mm-hmm. a lot of shame about anger and sadness. And so we all learned to stuff them away. And then, of course, you run into circumstances in your life that will release them. They will free them. And I think the harder we try to ignore that they're there, the bigger train wreck that comes along. And it's a blessing. It, as one woman in my workshop said, it's a blessing that sucks, but it works because it really shakes us up and it wakes us up to say, you know, all of this is part of the journey. All of this is part of the ride. And there's a way to move past the emotions by going through them. And we don't have to wallow very long or at
mm-hmm.
all, as
mm-hmm.
long as we really honor that they're a part of being human, as well as the joy or the peace that we all want to live in.
That's so true. In my book, The Art of Living a Life You Love, I talk about how some people seem to think that a positive mental attitude means that you go around saying, oh, there's no weeds in my garden. But, you know, what you do is you see, oh, there's a weed. And if you have a positive mental attitude, you go, oh, I don't want that there. I'm going to pull that up and I'm going to plant some flowers instead.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
So it's not about that our lives don't ever have weeds. And you're right. I have my moments where my husband and son will definitely tell you. They imitate Wayne Dyer when he talks about his daughters and his family, and they'll go, what would people think if they could hear Miss Positive right now?
Oh, God. Well, yeah, I mean, it's just being human, and it's really interesting because that humanity is where we find our connection. It's so ironic. There's this strange paradox that when we admit our weaknesses and our flaws and our humanness, that's where our divinity is, which seems like it shouldn't be so. We should be able to be this perfect picture of grace and ease. And yet, the place I found I connected with others was in my admission that I couldn't be a perfect being. I never would look the part, and that was thankfully one reason why I was kind of forced to go inside and to discover that I just pushed the world away for a while, and in doing that and finding myself and having more self-awareness, I discovered how similar I was to others. I thought I was so different. But as I started to share what I thought were the warts of my life and of me, other people say, I feel the same way. And then that was when I really began to make deeper heart connections with people, when in the past I'd always tried to hide what I considered imperfect about me, or my anger even, or anything that I thought was not something I wanted people to think of me as. And then I realized, well, who am I trying to pretend? Then other people don't have permission to be real if I'm not going to be real. So it's better that we lay our cards on the table, and then we take the weeds or the adversity or the loss and the heartache, and you can use that. It can become the adversary becomes the advocate. The way we look at it, the way we choose to respond. It's not that we say it's the weed isn't there. We say, oh, what do we do with that obstacle so that it's an opportunity for us and others to be okay with our humanity, and that shoots us forward into our divinity.
I love that. I love what you're saying and how you're saying it. It totally resonates with what I've learned, and you're right. I mean, for so long, I thought, in fact, I remember growing up and being blonde and being 5'2". So, you know, people are always...
You're towering compared to me.
Well, true, that's true. But no, I didn't mean that it was short. I just meant that, you know, it just meant that it was... They kind of thought of me as like this little girl in a way, you know, they would think that I was just who I look like on the outside. And the funny thing about it is that, you know, it seemed like during high school and even college that a lot of times boys liked me because of how I looked, but I wanted them to like me for who I was inside, you know, not just who I was on the outside. And the funny thing is that I ended up going to beauty college after getting my degree in art because I thought, well, maybe if I look better. You know, so I had finally bought into that whole thing of, well, maybe if my hair is just right, if I know how to do my makeup. And it was funny because, Julie, during beauty college, that was when my brother gave me a copy of Napoleon Hill's book, Success Through a Positive Mental Attitude, and I started realizing that what I loved about people that came in to get their hair done in the beauty school was I liked how they looked at life, you know, whether they chose to look at what was good and the opportunities and difficulties, or whether they chose to complain about the couple things that were wrong in life, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And how much of that was a choice, and to realize that's what started me on the whole path of what you were saying about personal development and spiritual growth. And actually, the very second book that I got was Wayne Dyer's book, Erroneous Zones.
My gosh.
Yeah, I was living with my brother at the time while I was going to beauty school, and they had Dr. Wayne Dyer on The Tonight Show, and he was talking about this book, Erroneous Zones. And I bought the book. I was reading the first one, the Positive Mental Attitude one. Didn't read Wayne Dyer's right away, to be honest with you, but when I moved to Marin County in 1978, I was reading the book still, you know, and refreshing my mind about the positive attitude, but all of a sudden I just got inspired to read Erroneous Zones, and having it talking about guilt and worry and shoulds and, you know, all of those things, how you thought, and about how first love has to come from you. It doesn't matter whether people love you back. Everybody's mm-hmm. like, oh, well, they might not love me back. But, you know, so that's what you're saying, too, though, in a very different way, though, is that, you know, how we look on the outside is only part of who we are.
And you obviously knew as a young girl you were getting attention for how you looked, but you knew there was so much more to you, and there's mm-hmm. more to us than our body. It's actually a big blindfold to what we really are, and there's more to us than our bank account, and there's more to us than, you know, the size of our butt, and there's just so much more there. But the attention getters, you know, the shiny objects out there uh-huh. can detract or distract us so easily from remembering that the treasure is inside, because the ones on the outside are always, you know, twinkling and attracting us, and certainly our eyes mislead us in so many ways. Like right now, we are, this planet is spinning at dizzying speeds around the sun, mm-hmm. and it's spinning on its axis. We can't feel it in the least, nor see it. And so our senses are not the greatest at determining truth or joy, but inside is, and where we feel. And if we're feeling badly, there's something to look at. There's probably some BS. There's some belief system about ourselves or our life that is not the way our soul would look at it. And so when we look at it that way, we're immediately disconnected from our best self. And when there's joy, there's something, there's great information there about following that, even if the culture says, you know, art isn't going to earn you money, or she really should stop singing, the way your grandmother made that
right,
one comment.
Right.
And it so made an impression on you, because you probably respected her, and you had that sense from our culture that the right brain stuff is just not as respected, and it's not... We're such a linear world, and about what you see is what you get, and we have trouble with the intuition, and we're in balance toward the left, and we really need to go more toward understanding that our gut and our intuition and our spiritual path may lead us in places that people say, oh my gosh, you do that and you'll be ruined, or you'll be, but we have to follow the call anyway. If it brings us any bit of joy, any bit of that lightheartedness or that laughter, sense that there's more to me than this 9-to-5 that is sucking the life out of me, mm-hmm. we just have to follow that call. Otherwise, at the end of our lives, we're going to be disappointed that we didn't live our music, you know?
That's so true. Yeah, that's exactly it. That's why I named my show Live Your Music, was because I'd heard Wayne Dyer say forever, don't die with your music still in you. And and I had thought a long time ago, I thought, well, how can I say that without the don't and without the die?
Because, and you did it.
Yeah, well, my friend Robert Berry, he's always been such an inspiration to me, but he had said to me a long time ago, he goes, well, what do Wayne Dyer and Tony Robbins and Louise Hay and Cheryl Richardson, what do they do that you don't like? And I thought about it, and I thought, well, nothing. And then I thought about it, and I thought, well, Wayne does use the word don't a lot.
interesting.
And I really love him. I totally love him and his messages. And I've even had some people say, well, but you know, when you say don't die with your music still in you, it reminds you that you better get on with it. And, it, and that's true as well.
Yeah,
but,
I like that you're looking for, though, the power in words. And so switching it can be a great affirmation. But, it, yeah, it can work at times, too. Don't put yourself down or don't. And then that's one step. And then the next step is saying a more powerful way of looking at it. You know, like what we were on earlier, saying, I am awesome. Just a, like an affirmation when you're feeling in the dumps can start to turn things around. So words are powerful.
Oh, words are so powerful. Oh my gosh, the time is just really flying by. It's and I just it always does on these shows because I have so much fun talking with my guests. And I wanted to make sure that we talked about you have a free ebook that people can get on your website, and then you also have a new program that you're doing, right?
Yes, my CPR for the Creative Soul. And it's an e-course, but it's 6 weeks of coaching. So it's private one-on-one coaching plus the, you know, tips and tools and stories and strategies of the e-course. It's downloadable as soon as you buy the course. But my free e-book, Release the Blocks So Creativity Rocks, it's that was a great joy to write, I have to say, because my memoir was took many, many years. It was very cathartic. There was a lot of emotion, a lot of release of old baggage that I didn't even know I still had. So it was teaching me as I wrote. My ebook just sort of sprang from a place of connection with my own creativity and this, I don't know, it was an inspiration of the humor of how we block ourselves and our own creative selves. And it's not just about crayons or drawing or dancing or music. It's the creativity of the masterpiece of our life. It's mm-hmm. how do we rally our true self, our real self. And a lot of that is in looking at how we've limited ourselves and to take it in a lighthearted way and to turn it around. And just by looking at the way we've belly flopped in life kind of energizes our appreciation of the ups and downs and the ultimate reach for the joy and to turn our ugliness into something beautiful. So it was a fun book to write. It's very colorful, and there's lots of information about there, particularly for right-brainers. But it's for most of us humans who are just trying to create more, just to feel more empowered in our own lives and with our own callings that often don't make sense to other people but make total sense to our own spirit.
Oh, that's so true. And this whole thing about right brain versus left brain, I definitely can relate so much more to the right brain people.
And
it can be so hard sometimes because a lot of times, as Julia Cameron has said in The Artist's Way, you know, we don't necessarily, as creative people, we're all creative, number one. And that just some of us just don't know it and aren't using it. But
and then it's pushed aside by our culture. So, of course, why would you reach for it? I remember my sister feeling very frustrated that she couldn't draw, and she'd watch me, mm-hmm. and she'd say, oh, I can't even draw a stick figure. And she never thought of herself as a creative person, and yet she's incredibly musical. She's got a great voice. She can hear every part harmony out there. You know, I can only hear a third above or below. But she can arrange music. She literally was so shocked when she said, oh my gosh, yes, of course, I am a creative person. I don't know why I associated it with only art, only painting, when the arts are just, you know, and it's the art of life. It's the art of being human and surviving it with some,
The art of life. That's why I titled my book, The Art of Living a Life You Love, because it's about making your life be a creative masterpiece by how living it in your own way, you know, and figuring out what matters most to you. And the funny thing is, when you're saying though about her and drawing the stick figures, is my grandmother was the one that told me not I couldn't sing, or had said that. She didn't actually say it to me, but she was an artist. She painted with oils, and she did beautiful oil paintings with. And she lured me into her art studio with the paints because I loved the colors. But I ended up majoring in art in college because that's what she wanted me to do. And I really, you know, other than playing with the colors, I really didn't want to do it. So.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Well, most grandma, I mean, that's unusual to be pushed toward art. It's a whole different way of looking at it. And my parents were always encouraging, but I really felt that most people were not, that art was a side dish. It was a hobby. It was not something that really mattered. And mm-hmm. I've since discovered my creativity not only matters to me, and it's truly a healing to be able to express myself in the way that fits me. And it's changed forms from art to writing. But I love music. I love dance. So, mm-hmm. you know, we have to find that path that is ours. And if someone encourages you who you respect, you may go down that path for a while, but ultimately discovering that, oh, look at that, how easily we're so impressionable. We're such sponges mm-hmm. that we'll just mm-hmm. take what people will say and run with it until we discover it hurts. And the hurt is the thing telling us it's time to move closer to what you really want to do.
Yeah, that's so true. You know, we're running out of time, and I have to mention who's going to be on next week, and you're not going to believe this.
Really,
because it's going to be Sky Dyer.
Oh, how exciting! I met her because she often sings when her dad is, and the time that I was called up on stage with Wayne, I was sitting next to her, and I asked her if she would videotape because he had told me last minute he was going to call me on stage, and I said, no one's going to believe this, so we talked a little bit. She's a sweetheart, so
Yeah, and that video is on your website so people can see it. But yeah, she's going to be on next week on November 19th, and we're going to be talking about her album Letting Go, and I'm going to play a song called My Time, a beautiful song she wrote and sings. And we'll be talking about how to live your music by choosing how you most want to spend your time, which is also what you do with your coaching and with working with the people with the creativity, is helping them figure out how they want to use their time.
Yeah, gosh. And there's so many things calling our attention. And as parents, we've got stuff and distractions and technology. And
right.
creativity just goes down the drain if there isn't enough quiet time or being out in nature or with animals or whatever it is that inspires you to quiet down and center. It's hard to do in a busy life, but it's so important.
It is. So important. You're right. In fact, you know, and before we run out of time, I want to remind our audience out there, what music do you hear calling you? What do you feel inspired to do? What gives you joy? Are you willing to let go of your limits and let yourself live your music? I hope each of you listening will do your best to love yourself, love the people and animals in your life, live your music, and enjoy your time on this beautiful planet we call Earth. I wish we had so much longer, and I'm going to have you back on so that we can talk about all the things we didn't get to.
I know. We had high hopes, but it's great.
Well,
to just have a conversation with you.
Yeah, well, one of the things I love about the 30-minute show is that it's an amount of time that it's easy to listen to later, and it gives a taste of what's going on with the people instead of it being overwhelming. Some of the hour but I just never get around to it. So.
Oh, me too. And it feels like, oh gosh, I have to devote a whole hour. I don't have an hour.
I know.
So,
half hour
I
can
awesome.
Do.
Yeah.
Oh, Julie, thank you so much for writing your book, for creating your beautiful art with the wonderful, inspiring sayings on it, and for being on my show today. And you just are such an incredible inspiration to me and to people all over our beautiful planet.
Oh, right back at you, Margot. Thank you so much. And I'm glad our paths crossed as many years ago and that we've stayed in touch. And I get to be here today and talk one-on-one. It always brings me up to be able to share what I've learned and to remind myself of what I already know and what I need to keep remembering. So thank you.
That's so true. We all need reminders. Well, Rogers has said that none of us is smart enough to remember everything we know. We all need some reminders.
Yeah, Zig Ziglar said something about that too, about having to bathe every day. It's the same thing. We have to inspire ourselves on a daily basis. Yeah.
Well, we're out of time, so I'm going to have to say bye. But I'm looking forward already to the next time we get a chance to chat.
You too. Thank you, Margot. Be well.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Bye for now.